Welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. It is getting colder outside, and many New Mexicans will soon be stacking up firewood for heat or just to give their homes a cheery glow. But where does the firewood come from? Who's selling it? And why did a federal judge prohibit collection on U.S. Forest Service land earlier this year? Today, we are talking about the firewood industry in New Mexico. We'll be discussing the spotted owl, the people who make their living harvesting wood, and those who rely on it for heat. And we want to hear from you. Do you heat your home with firewood? Do you collect your wood from public lands, or do you purchase from a wood dealer who does? How would the court's injunction against collecting wood have affected you? Or do you have questions about how firewood is bought and sold? Give us a call at 277-5866. Email us your questions and comments at letstalk@kunm.org or tweet using the hashtag letstalknm. Now, joining me in the studio today is John Horning, Executive Director of Wild Earth Guardians, the organization that filed a lawsuit on behalf of the endangered spotted owl that resulted in the court-ordered injunction against firewood collection earlier this year. Thank you for coming in this morning, John.
It's good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Sure thing. So let's start at the beginning. So tell me about this lawsuit that prompted the injunction. What is it about?
Well, it's fundamentally about the Forest Service's responsibility to manage our national forests for the benefit of all Americans. That includes abiding by federal environmental laws, whether those be the Clean Air Act or Clean Water Act, or in this case, the Endangered Species Act. The Endangered Species Act was passed nearly 50 years ago, and it stands for the basic principle that we shouldn't cause species to go extinct. Mm-hmm. It's a law that the Forest Service has had a hard time abiding by because of their bias towards extractive industries. So part of what Wild Earth Guardians' role is to make sure that the Forest Service does its job. Mm-hmm. Part of that job includes ensuring that endangered species are on the path to recovery. And the way that the agency was supposed to do that was to monitor Mexican spotted owls across the region, mm-hmm. range-wide monitoring.
Now, that's the Southwest region?
This is the Southwest region, okay. Which includes all of New Mexico and Arizona, 11 national forests, 21 million acres. So they had an obligation to monitor Mexican spotted owls, again, to ensure that they were on the road to recovery. And this was a requirement that was included in what are called biological opinions. These are issued by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, which is the agency charged with ensuring that the Endangered Species Act is complied with. Mm-hmm. For many years, there was a requirement to do this range-wide monitoring, and for decades, the agency didn't do that. And so our lawsuit simply said, you're actually supposed to do that. The judge, after 6 years of deliberating and briefs back and forth, found that the agency, in this case the Forest Service, was negligent in its duties to care for the owl. And so he issued an injunction on all timber management activities back on September 11th.
Now, when did the lawsuit originally get filed?
It was filed in 2013, actually, okay. 6 years ago.
So this decision has been sort of a long time. It took a long time to get to this point.
It did. And in part, the reason that it took a while to get to this point is we spent about a year and a half to 2 years trying to negotiate a settlement with the Forest Service that would have required them to do what the judge ultimately is requiring them to do, which was to monitor the owl population and to understand how some of the logging that is going on within spotted owl habitat, whether or not and how that is affecting the owl. So there are two basic issues. One is, how is the owl population doing? Mm-hmm. And the other is, how is logging affecting the owl? Mm-hmm. There's a belief that if we log our forests, we can restore them to health. And what the agencies all know is that there is no empirical data that supports that more logging is to the benefit of owls. And that's quite concerning to us.
Now, as I mentioned, the lawsuit resulted in this injunction that, among other things, prohibited personal firewood collection on forest lands. But that was not your organization's intention. How did that injunction come about? Like, how did that aspect of wood collecting get lumped into commercial logging?
Yeah. Well, I think it was in large part because that's how the Forest Service chose to interpret the judge's injunction. And I think it was also in part because the judge was quite, I would argue, quite upset with the agency's negligence, shirking this basic duty to monitor owl populations for 20 plus years. So that was not something that we ever asked for. And after a period of less than a week, we actually initiated a request to the judge to release personal firewood cutting from the injunction scope. And the judge responded within 3 or 4 days and allowed those activities to proceed.
Okay. And along the same lines, Judge Collins is expected to hold a hearing today on this issue. What is that hearing going to be about?
Well, the Forest Service, rather than choosing to reach agreement with guardians on some core matters and basically do what the judge directed him to do, filed a motion, which they are allowed to do, seeking to essentially relitigate the case. They basically said, Judge, we think you got it wrong. We think you got it wrong on the law, on the merits, and on the scope of your injunctive relief. And so the judge is having a hearing to address that motion, which, again, is filed by the Forest Service saying we think you got it wrong.
Okay. Now, at this point, I'd like to bring into the conversation Shane Martin, the Director of Communication and Engagement for the Southwestern Region of the U.S. Forest Service. He's joining us by phone. Good morning, Shane.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. And thank you for joining us today. So first of all, I'd like to ask you a little bit about what this injunction currently covers, because I think there is a lot of confusion about where things stand right now. Is personal firewood collection at this point allowed?
Yes, personal fuelwood collection at this point is allowed.
Okay, and what about commercial firewood collection?
So many commercial firewood collection operations have stopped. There are certain activities that have been allowed since the recent stipulation that modified the injunction, but there's a lot of details and intricacies associated with that. So a majority of commercial fuelwood operations has still ceased.
And I think one of the other aspects of the injunction that got a lot of attention was Christmas tree harvesting. Where do things stand there?
So right now, I actually just got back from Red River yesterday. The Capitol Christmas tree project went off without a hitch. So I know that's a little bit different than personal use Christmas trees, but just want to make sure everyone knew that one out. We live streamed. It was a really great event. And then all the individual Christmas tree permits are now allowed, so people can go out and get their Christmas tree permits.
Okay. And how is this, how is the current status of the spotted owls protection, how is that interplaying with this injunction at this point?
So the Mexican spotted owl, we've actually worked with the Bird Conservancy of the Rockies for the past 6 years, the Forest Service has, in conjunction with U.S. Fish and Wildlife, to have a spotted owl population monitoring, mainly focused on site occupancy for the individual projects. As you know, the Southwestern region isn't this monolithic region. Parts of Arizona are a lot different than parts of New Mexico. Different projects are in different type of landscapes. Different animals thrive in different types of landscapes. So each individual project is treated most of the time differently depending on what it's done. And we have to take into account any endangered species as a compliance with the Endangered Species Act when we undergo a project or any type of project that requires an environmental assessment or an environmental impact statement, or things as large as like a forest plan, which a lot of the forests in New Mexico and Arizona are going through their forest plan revision process. So that comes into play then as well.
Okay. And to kind of broaden the conversation a little bit back to firewood, how many personal use firewood collection permits are issued by the Forest Service in New Mexico each year?
So I think it's around 6,000. Typically, it's, you know, a little above or below that, but it's been pretty steady for the last few years. So it'd be around 6,000. And it varies depending upon the different areas and the different forests. Some forests have more than others.
Okay. And what about commercial firewood collection?
So commercial firewood collection, it just depends. I want to say we have a little less than 100 total commercial firewood operations across the region. Within New Mexico, I know that there are like four, I think, on the Gila and different like different ranger districts and the Cibola. Some of the wood that's collected goes to commercial fuel wood or firewood, but a lot of it is under a lot of restoration projects. So getting at the exact number of the amount of commercial fuel wood or firewood operations is associated with a lot of the restoration work is kind of a harder number to pin down, but it's several.
Okay. And do you have a sense of how these numbers stack up compared to other states in the Southwest region?
So I guess I want to make sure that you and your listeners understand. I know most people that live in Arizona and New Mexico have a good feeling about that, but the Forest Service covers the entire country. So the forests in New Mexico and Arizona are not like your large monolithic forests in the states like Washington, Oregon, or like out east where it's a huge mix of commercial, private, state, and federal lands that do a lot of the firewood. So in the arid Southwest, there aren't a lot of large timber operations. And the majority of timber and logging, if not almost all of it at this point, are often associated with restoration projects that are designed to protect communities and wildlife from the risk of catastrophic wildfire. So that's really the main focus in the Southwest, which is much different than the other parts of the Forest mm-hmm. Service.
Okay. And so we're talking about kind of smaller organizations that are involved in the restoration projects that John was speaking about earlier?
Yeah, I think the New Mexico Forestry Industry Association said that, you know, from a job number, there's about 64, 65 primary jobs that are associated with a lot of this activity. Each of the forests have typically 1 to 3 commercial activity, like a contractor that works. A lot of these folks employ, you're talking around 15, maybe at the top 45 people individual. A lot of them are in the 20s and 30s. A lot of them have a few trucks, and a big number of them were involved with the Collaborative Forestry Restoration Project, which has been a multi-year program in the Forest Service to build industry where industry no longer exists, where industry was needed to make restoration activities, the ones that are aimed at reducing the catastrophic wildfire, into something that's economically viable because, you know, if you do restoration work, if you do thinning, if you do especially out, you know, in different areas, you harden communities towards wildfire. You don't want to just leave that stuff laying on the ground because then you have a buildup of fuels, which there's been a lot of evidence over the past 20 years that lack of the ability for us to remove that or have industry remove that has led to an overabundance of fuels and combined with the lack of some types of proper forest health management in certain areas, which is why you kind of see the catastrophic wildfires coming up. And we're trying to address that through a lot of these projects.
Okay, and tell me about this hearing today. What is the why is the Forest Service asking the judge for this hearing today?
So the judge stated the hearing needed to be held. There's been a lot of court filings, and if you go to our website fs.usda.gov, and then there's a spot you can go to the MSO injunction. There are over 17 court filings in just the period of since September 11th. So there's a lot of intricacies involved. I won't do it justice on the radio because the court documents can be a little bit heavy to understand. But there was a deadline for the Forest Service to meet on 10 October to file essentially a clarification. We filed a motion for modification. We worked with the plaintiffs in order to file stipulation modifying the judgment while we were actually waiting for that. But the court said based on that modification, and what we're asking for, there needed to be a hearing to talk it out.
Okay. So I want to go back to John here for a second. In an ideal world, what should the Forest Service be doing to protect the spotted owl?
Well, I think there are a couple of things, but if I could, I'd like to respond to two points that Shane raised, one related to the owl, the other related to fire.
Okay, let's do that first point, and then we're going to go to break. So,
okay. The Forest Service should be doing two things. One, monitoring owl populations range-wide and making that a commitment in biological opinions. And then secondly, they should be monitoring how these forest health treatments are affecting owls. Right now, we have no empirical data, and there's this belief that we need to treat the forest for the health of the forest, but we have no empirical data about whether or not owls benefit from those treatments or are harmed by those treatments. And I think it's a tragedy that here we are 25 years after the owl was listed, and we don't have that basic information.
Okay, this is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman. We are talking about firewood collecting on public land and how that firewood collecting works with things like the Endangered Species Act, as well as the people who depend on this firewood collection for their livelihood. Do you collect wood for your personal heating needs? Call us at 277-5866 and tell us about it. We are going to take a quick break.
Marble Brewery supports KUNM. Since 2008, Marble Brewery is devoted to brewing premium craft beer while building and supporting community with three tap rooms around Albuquerque. More information at marblebrewery.com.
Next time you lace up your running shoes, don't forget to take KUNM with you. Our new mobile app has live streaming, our two-week archive, podcasts, and much more to keep you company on your run. Search KUNM in the Apple App Store or Google Play and download today.
Join the Children's Hour this Saturday in a live broadcast at the Museum of the American Military Family in Tejeras, New Mexico. We'll learn how having a parent in the armed forces affects a family. Featuring musical guest Rowan McJimsey, the Museum of the American Military Family is just off I-40, north at the Tejeras exit. Doors open early at 8:30 a.m. More info is at KUNM.org. That's the Children's Hour live at the Museum of the American Military Family in Tejeras, New Mexico. Saturday, 9 to 10 a.m. right here on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. And going back to John Horning, the executive director of Wild Earth Guardians, you had a follow-up?
Yeah, really just one point that I want to make, and it's a core dispute. There's a belief that fire is catastrophic, and I think there's a complex ecology of fire, not only in the Southwest, but across our country, and part of what we need to do is learn to live with fire. I want to make this one point. I do not believe we can fireproof our forests. Just before we came on air, we heard a story about fire in the Amazon. We have to deal with fire. We are dealing with fire in the context of a warming planet. We cannot fireproof our forests. We can fireproof our communities. I think that's where our focus should lie.
Okay. Now I'd like to welcome Matt Allen, the CEO of Mount Taylor Manufacturing, into the conversation. Mount Taylor Manufacturing is a company that uses wood from U.S. Forest Service lands. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning.
So your business mostly focuses on wood pellets for use in pellet stoves. And where do you get the wood for that?
Well, let me correct you a little
bit. Go ahead.
Wood pellets is one product we manufacture. Okay. What we do, we've got subcontracted harvesters, and we do forest restoration. So we're doing small diameter, selective harvesting. So Forest Service actually goes out, and they go through the woods looking at what they want remaining, if you will. And the trees that they want to be left behind, they'll put an orange stripe around them, and that's called a leave tree. And so we're taking trees that are designed to leave the forest in what is termed uneven age silviculture, which Mr. Horning will tell you is exactly what the spotted owl needs for improved habitat. What they don't want is even age silviculture, which is leaving all the trees at the same basic age, okay, height, et cetera, et cetera. And so we've always done uneven age silviculture, trying to leave the forest in what is termed clumpiness and very much like they believe the forest was naturally prior to European settlement, et cetera. So the material that we harvest, it's not of great value because the trees are not of great value. They're very crowded. They're drought ridden, and so when you have a fire, it's an extremely hot fire. Mm-hmm. And I heard John say that we have to live with fire, et cetera, and I agree with that. But the problem is that it's out of balance right now. And particularly in the Zuni Mountains. The Zuni Mountains were basically between about 1897 and 1917. They were clear cut. What we would term lumber barrens during that period of time actually really wiped out the Zunis. Mm-hmm. I believe, personal opinion, that once they finished harvesting and over-harvesting, because people weren't tuned into the environment then as we are now, there's still seeds in the ground, and those little seeds started to sprout. And there was an influx of cattle ranchers and sheep ranchers, and those animals have a choice between eating flora and fauna or these bitter little trees, and they left the bitter little trees alone, and the trees flourished. And so now we've got these forests that are just jam-packed. And the problem with leaving fire alone is the fires we've had in the Zunis have sterilized the soil. And people don't realize that. You have a fire that's so hot, it sterilizes the soil. And not to mention, and this is a critical aspect of it, everybody gets excited about forest restoration as preventing catastrophic wildfires. But it, more importantly, it protects our watersheds. When you have a really bad fire and there's all this ash on the ground, et cetera, the next rainfall silts up the watersheds and it can ruin them. And Grants, Milan, Gallup all depend on water from the Zuni Mountains, from those watersheds. So we're doing critical work in a lot of areas. Back to wood pellets, it's not the only thing we do. We bring those trees in, we cut them into lumber. A normal sawmill would try to cut lumber where they're trying to get grade, what's called grade lumber. So you have these different grades that are worth quite a bit more money. We don't get that material. We get a basic grade, and it is appropriate for manufacturing pallets, basically. And we ship most of our product into the El Paso area and into Mexico. So the offfall, if you will, the waste from that is converted to a number of products, including wood pellets, colored garden mulch, we walk on bark. We have a yard here in Albuquerque South Valley as well, and we use it as a distribution yard, and we actually have another pellet mill open there. So we've got two mills open, and if you go to a playground, pardon me, in Albuquerque, and you bump into playground chips, be it dog parks or whatever, it's us. That's material out of the Zuni Mountains that we brought in. And so very critical, this project for us. And so there's a lot more products. When we're finished with a tree, literally nothing goes to the landfill from our company other than office and toilet trash. Everything else is recycled. And beyond that, in the South Valley, we recycle clean wood waste and we prevent it from going to the landfills. You have certain companies that have these big skids that they bring in equipment. We used to work with Intel until they started pulling their horns in. And these giant one-time use skids would go right into the landfill, and we'll break those up and grind them up, and we've got magnets to remove any tramp metals, nail screws, etc., and we can make pellets out of that as well.
So, John Horning of Wild Earth Guardians, I want to go to you real quick. Is the kind of project that Matt Allen of Mount Taylor Manufacturing describing, is that consistent with the forest? Can that be consistent with the Forest Service services need to protect endangered species like your organization is concerned with?
The answer is simple. I don't know. We don't know. The Forest Service doesn't know. That's part of why the judge issued the injunction in the first place. He found that the agency was negligent in its basic duty. There's a lot of momentum and belief that we need these forest health projects. I would argue that one way we should measure the health of the forest is to look at indicator species like the spotted owl. And I think it's been a breach of responsibility on the part of the agency not to do these two things: monitor the owl range-wide, and to monitor the impact of these so-called logging health treatments on the owl. The agencies, both the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Forest Service, state quite clearly in the Spotted Owl Recovery Plan that we're driving blindly on this. And so that's, again, judges don't issue injunctions cavalierly. They do so when they see that an agency has repeatedly and consistently over a long period of time broken a basic duty. And so I, like I said, we don't know, and I'd like for us to know. I think I know in part why. If we had that information, the agency would be accountable to it. And so there's a way in which not having it allows them to take actions that are responsive to social and political pressures instead of the ecological bottom line, which should guide their decisions.
Okay, we are talking about firewood today. We are taking your calls. How do you think the Forest Service should balance the needs of endangered species and the humans who use natural resources? And also, where do you get your firewood from? Do you get it from a larger woodyard or a seller that you found via Craigslist or met on the side of the road? Have they expressed any concerns about their livelihood in the light of this legal battle? Call 277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org. Going back to you, Matt, Alan, I kind of want to shift gears a little bit and talk about pellet stoves. What is the difference between a pellet stove and a more traditional wood-burning stove?
Efficiency as much as anything. There's a number of reasons pellets are a superior product. New pellet stoves, actually, when you're burning your pellets, you can get up over 90% efficient. A fireplace is about 40% efficient. So most of your heat is actually going up the chimney. Mm-hmm. A wood stove, if I remember correctly, is about 65% efficient. So a pellet stove is a much superior method of heating your home. And there's people out there in the world, and certainly in Albuquerque, that's all they have to heat their home with. And some years ago, I don't know if you recall, but there was a huge pellet shortage in Albuquerque. And I had a couple call me and say, this is all we have. Can you please, please get us a ton of pellets? And I get a little soft-hearted sometimes when people have problems. And so I loaded a ton up and agreed to meet them. And they pulled up in a one of the new Volkswagen Bugs with a little tiny trailer behind it. And they loaded a ton of pellets in the back seat and on that little trailer. And the car was sitting basically pretty close to on the ground as they drove away. But they were sure happy because they could heat their homes. So it's a high-demand item here. And we make a very good pellet. We sell... Pardon me. We sell our pellets. The biggest customer we have is Costco. We sell a brand called Tiny Timbers. We have another brand that we manufacture called Calientitos, which is Spanish for little hot ones. And they're both very popular.
And how many people does your company employ?
Well, we're at about 48.
48
and,
people?
Yeah. And I want to emphasize that at the sawmill and the pellet plant in Milan, most of our employees are Navajo. And so this injunction, et cetera, and there's been a couple little changes to it. First, you know, to allow firewood collecting. And then second, they came back and said, well, you can harvest in areas that are not spotted owl habitat. And I've had so many people call me and say, hey, great, you guys are back out harvesting again, right? They fixed it. No, because areas that are not spotted owl habitat are pinyon juniper forests. Mm-hmm. And we can't make lumber out of pinyon juniper, and we can't run a sawmill with it. So... The unemployment rate on the Navajo Reservation is at about 42% right now. I have enough logs in that were previously harvested before the injunction started that I believe we will be able to run until right before Christmas. And at that point, I will undertake the task of laying off 27 to 30 people. Mm-hmm. And so my frustration with the injunction is, and I mean no offense to Wild Earth Guardians, and I've been talking to Judy Brower in the Idaho office off and on quite a bit, and she's very pleasant. But I feel like the injunction could have been written differently. There was criticism from Judy, certainly, that Forest Service did not have to stop firewood collecting, but firewood harvesting is considered part of forest management, and the injunction says no forest management. And I think that Forest Service would have been damned if they did and damned if they didn't in this situation. And when it's in an injunction, a judge signs it, they have to do what they have to do. I don't want that to be interpreted as I'm super pro Forest Service on this project. I work with Forest Service. There's a number of people that I admire very much. I think somewhere in there the ball has been dropped. I don't know exactly. I get different stories from different sides of the argument. Not interested in really making a judgment on it. I am interested in saying that come Christmas morning when everybody else's kids are opening their little gift for the G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu grip or something, that there's a good chance my employees are going to be sitting there with nothing to open and their kids. And so I resent that very much. The kids, you have to ask which are more endangered, the owl or the kids, and particularly on a Navajo reservation where poverty is so high. And so that upsets me a great deal.
Okay, I feel like we should go to John here for a response about kids versus owls. What are your thoughts there?
Well, I think the Forest Service is responsible for creating this crisis in the same way that they created the crisis that Matt alluded to by virtue of clear-cutting the forest back in the early part of this century. This is an agency that can be reckless in its disregard for the basic law. We spent a year and a half trying to negotiate with them, and they disregarded those efforts. So if people are upset, I would say hold your government officials accountable for failing to do their basic duties, and let's get them to abide by the law.
Okay, and Shane Martin, as the as kind of the representative of the U.S. Forest Service on the show here, what are your thoughts on the turn that this conversation's taken?
So I just wanted to make some points of clarification.
Sure.
So you know the clear cutting you had mentioned, that was before the Forest Service was even an organization. So that's kind of a bad faith or unfair argument, and kind of disrespects kind of what happened in history, that the Forest Service in itself was created as a multi-use agency in order to provide resources for the most people for the longest amount of time. It's kind of written in our motto. So we weren't even an agency in the federal government until the early 20th century passed that whole time and was directly created in order to help maintain the national forests and grasslands. So I just want to make sure that's a clear point on this. And the second point is that we do have a fairly robust site occupancy monitoring program for the Mexican spotted owl. A lot of the different projects that we're doing when it comes to restoration, I think Matt Allen for talking about the importance of watersheds and when it comes to this arid Southwest and a lot of the work we're doing, a lot of that work is not, you know, we don't have 20 years, 30 years, 40 years worth of experience doing this type of work. So this work is a newer type of work. A lot of the data that we've seen that we've collected over a period of time is not, you're not talking about decades and decades and decades worth of data here. So it's not really an fair assessment to ask for scientific methods that have not been developed or data that needs to have more time to be more robust for 20, 30 years for us to, in order to actually start doing a lot of this restoration work that's been proven to work to protect communities, protect watersheds, and to protect wildlife from catastrophic wildfire. So I just want to make sure that everyone knows that's very clear.
Okay, and we have a phone call from Steve in Santa Fe. Good morning, Steve. What do you want to add to the conversation today?
Well, first of all, Ty, I'm a big fan. Thanks for having me on.
Great. Happy to have you.
I just want to, before I ask my question, try to make sure I got my data points right. So is it correct that when they asked the judge to let people do firewood collection, the judge said yes in a couple of days?
Yes. Yeah, that is correct.
Okay.
And further, this is my last question before I ask my big question. Did that environmental dude say that it was the Forest Service who interpreted that the injunction meant that people couldn't collect firewood?
Yes, that was the Forest Service that interpreted the injunction in that way.
Okay, so then that's, I guess, my question. It seems like, and forgive me, and I'm trying to upset the Forest Service guy, but it seems like it's possible that the Forest Service is trying to confuse the issue, because I'm trying to make sense of this, and it just seems to me like these guys have had 20 years to do this study, And if they had done the study like 19 years ago or 17 years ago or 15 years ago or 8 years ago, none of you guys would be on the radio talking about this. And it makes it sound like this environmental dude and the spotted owl versus people and the kid's toy with the kung fu grip. And I'm just wondering if there's any chance, and I don't know if this guy will be able to answer honestly, that the Forest Service interpreted that you couldn't collect firewood just to create this kind of tempest in it, or this kind of conflict, the way you're framing it. Do you know what I mean? I'm just wondering if it's possible that the Forest Service wants you to be having this conversation, so it's like the kid's toy versus, do you know what I mean, the spotted owl, instead of like competent government agencies doing their job,
okay,
versus government agencies who aren't doing their job. Thank
you. Let's go to Shane Martin. And Shane, I think this is a question about how the interpretation of the injunction came about. Was that done by the Forest Service, or what was the rationale behind the current interpretation?
So the court-ordered injunction was really short, actually. It stated timber management activities within the southwestern region, Region 3. It was later clarified that because a lot of the forests in Arizona had updated biological opinions, that the ruling was moot for the other forests besides the Tonto in Arizona, meaning that it fell mostly on New Mexico. So the court ordered that timber management activities within Forest Service manual and the way the Forest Service actually calculates timber management activities, most of the forests in New Mexico, you're talking over 50% of fuel wood collection counts towards the timber management activities. In places like the Carson National Forest, you're over 75% of timber management activities are fuel wood. So based on DOJ, OGC, which is Office of General Counsel for USDA, based on the Department of Justice and U.S. Fish and Wildlife, there's three federal agencies involved in this. There was no interpretation on that. It was written for timber management activities. So we wanted to make sure that we clarified that to the point, which is why we worked diligently over a period of several weeks there to try to find a way to ask the court for clarification on what exactly that meant. Because as now, as Ray was written, the way that we had to actually implement it, it was incredibly broad, which we didn't think was the original intent. It turned out that was correct. The court made adjustments and the plaintiff agreed.
Okay, Shane, real quick, we have to go to a break right now. We'll come back to you in a moment. You are listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. We are discussing firewood collecting and the federal injunction to protect the spotted owl, and we want to hear from you. Tweet to us using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM or email letstalk@kunm.org. We will be back in a moment.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA. Before there was Donald Trump, there was Proposition 187.
We became voters. People like my mother stood there and filled out her application for citizenship.
The story of how California Republicans went to war against undocumented immigrants in 1994 and the lasting consequences. Next time on Latino USA.
That's Latino USA, Monday mornings at 8 a.m. on KUNM.
On the show this month, I talked to Dr. Erica Barrero-Volkers, who has served as the Dean for the School of Communication, Humanities, and Social Sciences at Central New Mexico Community College for the past 7 years. On the show today, you'll learn how Erica uses authentic leadership to improve her workplace and how leadership is an ongoing journey.
I believe good leadership is about leading authentically. I believe that good leadership is about care.
Join me this Friday for the Well Woman Show at 8 a.m. right here on KUNM.
This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. Shane Martin, sorry about having to cut you off there, but I want you to have a chance to go ahead and finish your thought.
Just clarifying that, timber management activities are such a significant portion of fuel wood and restoration projects that when a court issues an order, you have to take it as written. There's no flexibility. If the court tells you that you can't drive, you don't start driving different cars because you interpret it to be the car that you own. So I've heard a lot of that, a lot of misinformation about what timber management activities are, and I've heard a lot of confusion on that. So I understand that it's very fairly complex. But just wanted to emphasize the point that timber management activities, specifically as it applies to fuel wood, accounts for a significant portion of the activity for our management activities in the southwestern region. So, the assertion that it was interpreted is false.
Okay, and we are taking your comments today. Do you burn firewood in the winter? Is it your sole source of heat? Why do you use firewood instead of natural gas or electricity? We would love to hear from you. Call 277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org or tweet to us using the hashtag letstalknm. So I wanted to just kind of put this out to the panel here today. How should we decide which areas of the U.S. Forest Service lands should be off limits to humans for resource collection versus protecting the needs of a species like the spotted owl? And Matt, go ahead.
First, your caller. I want to address something because in the way he phrased his question concerning G.I. Joe with the Kung Fu Grip, which is a slang saying that's in my little pea brain. That was not Forest Service that leveraged kids against owls. That was Mount Tedder Manufacturing. I don't want Wild Earth labeled with something they didn't do. I don't want Forest Service labeled with something they didn't do.
Okay.
So back to your question.
Sure.
Please. What was it?
Oh, well, in your opinion, do you think that there are areas of the forest that should be made off limits to human resource gathering or any kind of interaction if there is an endangered species there that needs to be protected?
Yes and no. Look, one, the spotted owl is not, it's on the endangered species list as threatened, not endangered.
Okay.
And people need to know that. Two, we have areas out there, we have wilderness areas everywhere that where there's no harvesting, et cetera, et cetera. The problem that we face is our public forests, and the reality is that setting them aside, particularly forests like in the Zuni Mountains, where the trees are so overgrown, we're not helping spotted owls, in my opinion. We're putting them at risk. The Wallow Fire in Arizona burned up somewhere between 87 and 130 protected activity centers, which translation is where they have found Mexican spotted owls, and so those are gone, and that pretty well wiped out that part of the world as well, and so the fires are devastating. We're not talking, and John's right, a normal fire is not a bad thing. Last year, we actually had a fire, a controlled burn, get away from Forest Service. And I have to throw in the caveat that while they were handling it, the winds kicked in, and they could have handled it. But some yahoo on the backside of Mount Taylor let his campfire get away from him, and they had to divert resources to that. And then some other less than intelligent person started a fire in a separate section of the Zuni Mountains, and they had to divert resources from that. And the fire got away from them. And I can take you up to where it absolutely decimated the forest, ran into an area we had previously done our restoration on, dropped to the ground, and slowly burned its way through at ground level. The trees are alive, everything is fine, and then hit more that had not been harvested and went crazy again, and they couldn't control it.
Okay.
So the other thing that I want to add to this, there is a woman, don't hold me to this, but I believe her name is Sarah Hoagland. She wrote a dissertation that I have read that's about 214 pages long. It was signed off by five PhDs in the field. And one of the very interesting phrases in that, in the latter part of the report, says that there is evidence that forest thinning and restoration enhances spotted owl reproductivity. Now, I don't think there's a big question that a healthier forest is good for all the animals. And we know that after we do our forest restoration, the elk, the deer, everything flood in because the sunlight's able to get to the ground. Grasses bloom or flora and fauna blossom and do very well. There's more feed for the animals, et cetera. And that opens it up also where Mexican spotted owls can see the rodents they feed on, etc. It's not so thick that they can't do their thing. And the last point that's kind of interesting as far as protecting species, and I have no problem with protecting species, but it's got to be a balancing act. And it's interesting that in the Pacific Northwest, the northern spotted owl, which is a cousin to the Mexican spotted owl, there's a $5 million government program right now for people, I don't know who, to go in and shotgun the barred owl, because the barred owl is more aggressive than the Mexican spotted owl, and they're competing for resources. And so in order to lessen the demand on mice and rats and things like this, we're actually killing another species that is not endangered or threatened. And so there's a certain irony in all of this that kind of makes me crazy. And the battle is between Wild Earth Guardians, Mr. Horning here, and the U.S. Forest Service. But my employees and my company are paying the price for it. And if they don't fix this soon, Cibola County, the Grand Cimarron area, is one of the poorest counties in the state. The state vies with Mississippi year in and year out for the dubious honor of being the poorest state in the union. And we're about to wipe out a whole lot of jobs. And I know at the beginning of the show, they said, Mr. Martin said something about 250-ish jobs at risk related to this. I don't think that's accurate. I think that's more like 500 to 600 jobs. And in our area, the number of jobs that we provide, there's an economist here in town named Mark Lautman that helped me on a project. And he told me that the number of jobs that we provide in the Grand Cimarron area would be akin to about 1,500 jobs in Albuquerque. So when we look at it and say, well, a few jobs are going to be lost, put it in percentages based on population and economic prosperity, and it's a hammering. It's a bad thing to do.
Okay, I have a phone call from Jerry in Albuquerque. Good morning, Jerry. What is your comment today?
I want to make something about the spotted owl, but regarding what I was just listening to, the fact is that we have centralization of control of the resources of this nation, so that the jobs are contingent on how those controllers decide to divvy out the resources. But regarding the spotted owl, as the reason why I first called in, is that it's not saving a wildlife species that it should be emphasized. But the fact is, when other creatures are exterminated because of what is being done to the environment, it is affecting all living creatures. So when we try to control the salvation of some species, it's not for the fact of the species, but you want to save the environment so that living creatures can survive, like humans as well as these other creatures. And the Aboriginal Native Americans lived within nature. We lived outside of nature. That's why these kind of discussions go on and on regarding peripheral issues rather than the core issues. Who controls the resources? And why are we so dependent on the jobs that these controllers decide to dish out?
Okay, thank you, Jerry. I appreciate your call. I have another call from Neil. Good morning, Neil. What do you have to say this morning?
Yeah, good morning. I'm a firefighter up in northern New Mexico, and I live in a wildland-urban interface. I also lost some land in the Los Conchos fire and experienced the soil sterilization. Also, it's impossible to access those valleys now. They're completely gone. I bring this up because that was the one place that I'd had wonderful encounters with the spotted owl, and now it's gone. And I mean, it's gone forever. It's never, never coming back. And I can't help but feel that we need to have a more aggressive forest management policy, which certainly would employ using fire against fire. It's a tactic that works, and right now we're on hold. Even the watersheds and so on that we regularly try and save, they're being endangered by this judge's order, and I think it should be revisited and repealed. Thank you very much.
Okay, and then I have another phone call from Bob in Albuquerque, who has a comment about restrictions on cutting dead and down trees. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning. Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think, you know, like the last caller was talking about, they've probably destroyed more habitat by mismanaging the forest by not allowing people to cut the dead and down all this fuel that creates these crazy wildfires, and more than anything. That's my comment.
Okay.
You know, they're just not their business. And they've killed more spotted owls with these crazy wildfires than anything in the world. Thanks.
Okay, and John of the Wild Earth Guardians, I think we've got a lot to potentially respond to here.
I want to return to a point that Shane made because it's central to Guardians' reason for existence. The first forests in New Mexico were created in 1905. The reason the spotted owl was listed in 1993 or 4 was that the Forest Service's management for those 9 decades caused it to become endangered or threatened. And so there is a long legacy of Forest Service management in which they logged our forests in a way that was quite irresponsible. And so, yes, there was some logging that preceded the creation of our national forest system and the U.S. Forest Service, but there's a lot of responsibility to bear on the part of the agency itself, and that's a deep part of Guardian's history. I also want to say Guardian's actually employs a crew of Navajo workers doing restoration work, largely focused on restoring streams and rivers. We work with Navajo communities to confront oil and gas development. We have a deep concern for addressing issues of poverty and injustice in our state. And I would like to see our state engage in a Green New Deal where we're actually solarizing communities and homes so that we're not dependent upon firewood. And I think that's the kind of thing that our elected officials at the highest level in the U.S. Senate and our governor could be doing. We need to be bringing clean drinking water and localized, decentralized electricity and heating to homes all across rural New Mexico. And in many ways, if we had that, and we should do it as quickly as possible, we wouldn't have this problem. One more point is there are plenty of communities in the American West where you actually can't have fireplaces anymore because of localized and regionalized air quality problems. There was just a story in the last few days about growing regional across the West air quality problems. And so I think we need to move beyond not only fossil fuels, but dependence upon firewood as a home heating source. And so we're not there today, but I actually think that's a vision that we should strive for so that we can provide people with the resources they need to heat their homes and do it from the sun.
Okay, and I want to go to Matt Allen of Mount Taylor Manufacturing. Is this a question of moving past an outdated technology?
Well, John is exactly right. Forest Service was started in 1905. Starting from that point and in that era, the idea of protecting of environmentalists as a group or how they harvested, et cetera, it didn't exist. That had to evolve over years. The reality, things that people don't know, is that out of the Zuni Mountains itself, narrow gauge trainload after trainload after trainload of logs came into Albuquerque. There was a company here named American Lumber that cut it up, and the first electric lights in Albuquerque were created burning sawdust that came out of the Zuni Mountains. They devastated the mountains, and in those days they called themselves timber barons, B-A-R-R-O-N. What I do for a living, I refer to myself as a timber baron, B-A-R-R-E-N, changes the whole context of it, and it's very difficult. But it's a hard way to make a living. But back to what John said.
And we are going to have to be shutting down in a moment here, so if you could make it
Let me just finish up very quickly that while no matter what we do at this point with solar, wind energy, Green New Deal, no matter what we do, it's not going to change what we have already in the forest. The trees are overgrown and we're stuck with it and we have to fix it. And the only last thing I would like to say, because I know we're hitting the end of the program, is I don't believe for a second, and everybody should look into this, that Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide.
Okay, well, that is all the time we have today. Thanks everyone who called in to share your thoughts, and thanks so much to our guests. Let's keep the conversation going. Share your thoughts on Twitter, hashtag #LetsTalkNM on Facebook. Search for KUNM Radio or email letstalk@KUNM.org. If you missed part of the show, stream it online or subscribe to our podcast. You can find it wherever you find your favorite podcasts. I'm Ty Bannerman. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Taylor Velasquez screened your calls. Bryce Dix live tweeted the show today. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.